The update of second half guidance was a bit of a shocker. So they guided to 80,000 ounces over the 6 month period we're currently in. So that previous midpoint was 112,500 ounces, which they'd reaffirmed just a month ago, almost 30% lower from a guidance that they'd reaffirmed 1 month ago. And on the cost front, they'd put forward an all-in sustaining cost of US $1,262 as a midpoint, which is a 27% increase. I think it's pretty amazing how in 1 month you can go from, you know, where they were to having production go 30% roughly the wrong direction and cost 30% roughly the wrong direction again.
Grade is king.
All right, Monday miners, Tuesday, 5th of September, the mining news. Mate, geez, as per Trav's blackout theory, this industry is heating up at the moment. There's shit going on everywhere. Love it. Love it. Good for business. What a job we got, eh?
What a job, mate. How are you going?
Oh, mate, I'm good. I just hooked the barn me into me from the Just Eats lunch bar.
Beautiful. Shout out to Q.
You're just an unofficial partner of the show because far out there feeding me good each day. If you're in the district and you go get one, make sure you heard it from our show. And he might bloody give me some extra chili on, or a bit extra pork on the next one.
Then you become an official partner of the show if we get a lifetime membership or something.
I know. I just want extra crackling on my barn me tomorrow.
If you're in the district.
If he doesn't mind. Mate, sensational. Boys, we've got a bit to get through. A little late announcement, a bit more context on what we talked about Bald Hill got dropped late yesterday from MinRes.
Yeah,
first
bit of rock solid info from a mining company to come out regarding that one. So, yeah, really keen to unpack that a bit more.
Yeah.
I think it's the third day in a row we're talking about it, but some good info.
Yes, and plenty more speculation on the way from myself. What else we got?
Tieto. I think between those two, we'll be pretty busy today. Tieto is one that I've followed for quite a while, but I'm not sure we've actually had the chance to speak about it. speak about it on the show so far. So they're ramping up the Abuja project in Côte d'Ivoire, also known as the Ivory Coast. So we'll unpack that one in a bit.
Nice. Trav, how's our bloody Spotify rankings looking, mate? You're all over this shit. We need some more stars, eh?
Oh, it's pretty good, mate. I think we've got like 200 five-star reviews on there on Spotify, which is pretty awesome. But we could always use more, mate.
Can always use more.
If the money miners want to chuck us a five-star on there, on whatever app they listen to, be it Spotify or Apple, on the Apple one, if you actually leave a comment in words, that's the way to do it. Just say, I like you guys, and give it five stars on Apple. But Spotify, you only have to tap the five-star button.
Yeah, right. Just bloody sort us out. Love would be a better word to use, I think, than like. But all the people that have clicked it, we appreciate the money minus support.
We sure do. And speaking of love, Maddie.
Oh, love. Do I bloody love these two companies. Just personally, I loved them before they were partners. K-Drill, RC Drilling Experts. I think the RC in the context of K-Drill stands for really competent. Really competent drillers.
Right.
Especially like at the helm of learning from the wisdom of Rhino Sullivan, like years and years of ore finding and getting the best out of drilling and shift changes.
I think he studied 25 years, you know, from the time he was about 4 years old to become an expert driller, didn't he?
He's actually the only man in Australia with a tertiary degree in exploration drilling.
Yeah.
From the Kalgoorlie School of Business.
Yeah.
True story.
Yeah.
This is the type of people you're dealing with at RC. K-Drill, get in touch with them. RC Drilling Experts, bloody gurus in the district. And speaking of other gurus.
Terra Capital.
Bloody great friends of the show. We can't send people back enough to listen to the Rare Earths podcast.
I was just going
to
second that.
DK, give you a pat on the back for your EV calc on Hastings yesterday too, Trav.
Did he? I didn't see that.
In the WhatsApp group, mate.
Oh, mate, I can't keep up.
This is the like Terra are good, Trav's good as well. This is the sort of level we're dealing with. So thanks to your support, K-Drill and Terra Capital. I promise I won't kiss you in public. Right, boys, let's get into it. MinRes, their implementation agreement with Alita Resources for the Bald Hill project came out late yesterday afternoon. Take it away, gents. What's it all mean? What didn't we know yesterday that we know now?
That's it. So, I mean, I guess at this point yesterday when we spoke about it, it was still rumours. We'd read in Street Talk that MinRes were imminently announcing a deal, but we didn't have any confirmation from the company itself. So we've got some rock solid info. And as a quick reminder, Alita Resources have a wholly owned subsidiary which owns and operates the Bald Hill mine in the south, in the goldfields of Western Australia.
I reckon you're the only man in Australia that pronounce it Bald Hill. You say it different to me. Money miners, who's right? Let us know. Bald Hill.
We could chat all day about pronunciation, you and me, Matty.
Pronunciation, isn't it?
Slightly different pages there. Okay, so MinRes reached an agreement with the deed administrator, which is of Alita, which, as we spoke about yesterday, was McGrath Nickel. And as a quick reminder why this is such a big deal, when the DFS came out and when Alita first started producing, they were talking about 155,000 tonnes per annum of spodumene concentrate plus a bit of tantalum. So they got a resource of 26.5 million tonnes at 1% lithium oxide, but they were producing. That's the key detail there. So Citigroup put out a note, I think yesterday or today, it might have been this morning, modelling Bald Hill at 140,000 tonnes per annum of spodumene concentrate at 6%, and they ascribed a value of $1.2 billion to the asset using a spodumene concentrate, 6% again, price of $1,200.
So that's a bit lower than we've seen others using 14, and we've calculated that, the research that came out yesterday about Liontown, Albemarle's bid for Liontown was at a $1,900
Yeah, so that's on the more conservative sides of valuations we've used.
Did they model that on a standalone basis, or were they factoring in any synergies with Mount Marion or anything like that?
The note spoke at length about synergies with, you know, factoring the whole operation, I guess, that MinRes have in play in the goldfields. They mentioned all their other shareholdings, which we'll get into later. You know, we've seen deals with Essential, Pantoro, Global Lithium, a whole range of minority interests that MinRes have. So there was a punchy comment, and this sort of relates to comments we'd made regarding the relationship between the administrators and the receivers, so McGrath Nickel and Cordamentha. So one of them stood out was that KM acts in the interest of foreign-owned Austroid, not the shareholders of Alita. So that's the words from MinRes. So this is the exact hostility that we were talking between those various parties all arranged in a company that's in receivership.
Okay, so where's this leave Alita, JD? There was talks about they have to be put into liquidation.
Yeah, so there's a court hearing later today, and essentially Alita needs to be put into liquidation for the sale process to go ahead, which is what MinRes and the administrators are trying to achieve.
Not sale process, but for the transaction to be executed. There is no sale process, and that's the that's the issue, right?
For MinRes to get their hands on the asset.
Yeah.
So MinRes state that they'll pay out the secured debt and thereby acquire Alita's interest in the mine, and they state it will result in a material return to Alita, and this is subject to an independent expert valuation.
So as in valuing the project to see how much they're going to pay.
Yeah, we don't have the actual sale documents, but it appears that one of the conditions of how much is to be paid, the consideration, is tied to an independent expert determines the value to be in some mathematical way. It's fascinating, right? Because the material return to Alita is the interesting point. There's so much interest in this process because there are shareholders of Alita that do believe that they have some residual claim to the value here as part of like this project's been in limbo for so long, right? My question to you guys is, do you think the best way to determine the value of this asset is for an independent expert to value it, or do you think an auction is the best way to value this asset?
I think quite clearly a sale process would be the best way to find, you know, the true value.
And what to confirm, why isn't there a sale process? That's been pushed by the receivers.
That is one of the big unanswered questions that sort of remains.
Because the sale process may take longer and the receiver will not get their money as quick.
I mean, the thing's dragged on for 4 years now. So we just don't really know, do we?
Yeah.
That's the unanswered question.
There's a few other takeaways that I had. So one is that it's great and kind of hilarious to see Ellison and MinRes continue to pressure the Aussie government at every opportunity that they get. So if they're not pressuring them about getting support to help fund downstream lithium projects in Australia, they're putting on the soft press, you know. And a quote from today's announcement: see the profits generated and taxes and royalties paid in Australia to the benefit of the Australian taxpayer. So that's a bit of a go at the royalty and offtake rather, you know, and royalty avoiding that they are accusing the current owners of doing. So they
you imagine that MinRes's acquisition, one of the conditions might also be to restructure that offtake agreement in some way that is, you know, better than it is currently.
Absolutely. So they go one step further and suggesting the Aussie government should intervene if certain foreign entities remain in control.
Yeah, was it FATA, that the Foreign Transaction Authority or something?
Yeah, they were mentioned.
They should intervene if this doesn't go through.
Yeah, so they were mentioned. So you raised a question that I had, and I had a few more questions this announcement didn't really help to answer. So, I mean, to reiterate, why haven't we seen a sale process? That is perhaps the biggest question I have. And sort of leading on from that, why has MinRes managed to win out? I'd be fascinated to hear why. Another question is, what return are shareholders going to see? That's all up in the air still. And it appears that Alita for quite some time could have been operating profitably. So I'd be interested to learn why there was no possibility of a relisting or anything like that. I'm sure there's perhaps a reason on that front. I'd just be interested to learn. As we just touched on, what's going to happen to the offtake agreement? MinRes are clearly not going to be happy if they're having to get this asset and then sell it and sell the concentrate for 60% below market price. That's just a no-go. And I'm sure, as we've already seen, the Australian government isn't quite happy with that. And one last question I had is the share price reaction from MinRes has been pretty muted today. They were off a couple of percent, given it's a bit more of a marginal transaction, given the scale of MinRes. But, you know, price depending, it should represent a bit of value if they manage to scoop it up for, you know, less than it's worth, which it kind of feels like they might be able to achieve.
If you pick up a hotly contended asset without actually competing, like you imagine, you know, it's on like better than reasonable terms to them.
Absolutely. So the only counter is that the share price over the past, you know, couple of weeks did tick up somewhat from the, you know, the 60s to the low 70s. Dollar per share for MinRes. So perhaps people had been anticipating this in and around all the rumours that we'd addressed last Friday in the change of ownership of Bald Hill.
Is the one of the key things about this, as you said, the unknowns and the way it's transpiring is the function and argy-bargy between McGrath Nickel and Cordamentha? Is it the roles they're playing? Like, is that the big... creating a bit of spice in this whole story?
I think that is absolutely right. But it's not just the argy-bargy between Cordamentha and McGrath Nickel. It's what's the extension of that argy-bargy? Well, it's also all of the shareholders of Alita, all of the, you know, the creditors beyond the unsecured creditors. It's everyone who stands to make something, including the other bidders that haven't been allowed in the process. I mean, you saw what looked like Glencore leak an article to The Australian a week or so ago because they weren't allowed to look in the door. Yeah. Well, that's what it read like to me. So there's all of those parties that have some sort of interest in an outcome here. Mm-hmm. And to some of those parties, it feels like the process might not have been the best process. But you kind of like, you look at it and you think, your fingers are going to be pointed. They're going to be pointed to the people running the process. They're not going to be pointed at MinRes. You have to respect the hustle, right? Like,
they're just doing what everyone wants to do. We read yesterday that over 10 parties have tried to acquire the thing. Mm. They're just the ones that look like they're going to win out. But
it's a fly on the wall jobby, isn't it? So many unknowns. What about MinRes? What do you think about in perception in the market at the moment with all this happening? And I guess Mr. Ellison's vision of doubling the business.
Yeah, I think there's few companies out there at the moment, in particular in the resource space, that divide opinion as much as MinRes. Like, some people absolutely love them. And, you know, you see the exact opposite of that as well. He's I've got a lot of time for founder-led businesses. He's built this business from the ground up. He's done a phenomenal job. And I think, you know, I think there is pretty solid data to show that founder-led businesses do perform better, and I think he's a great example of that. I do want to shout out, there was an interesting video, about a 10-minute long video that MinRes actually put out, and it was a bit, you know, behind the scenes in the life of Chris Ellison. It was a really interesting watch for quite a private man. So we'll chuck that one in the show notes for people
that want
to see. Because
he's not a person that goes on podcasts or anything. So it was actually good to get a bit of insight into the person.
Yeah.
It was good. It was only went for 9 minutes. They did it very quickly, but it was, I watched it as well. A lot of respect for it.
Not on a podcast yet, mate.
Just yet.
We'll wind him down eventually. I need a contact in there. I'll message one contact in there. He won't reply to my messages. I am trying.
We'll get there one day.
You went really into the weeds on the whole region today. You were looking at who has, I like to do this. Yeah. I mean, you were really sort of looking, okay, what's the play here from a strategic lens and all of these stakes that MinRes have in these juniors around them. What did you decipher?
Well, and it's probably more deciphered one little one that's been forgotten about and doesn't get mentioned too much. So we've got the map here of, you know, you've got the Global Lithium's Manor, you've got Mount Marion, you've got Pioneer Dome, West Spargoville. So MinRes are in a JV there as well. I didn't look too much into that. Bald Hill, obviously the one in question. But then you've got within that little triangle there, you look at where Bald Hill is, you've got Pioneer Dome, Essential Metals, which developer are taking over, and MinRes are a shareholder of as well. Then you've got Boldania, Liontown's Boldania. Hasn't really been talked about. It's like it's a little... Not a forgotten soul. Yeah, I think this is their Boldania's their smaller one.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. 15 million tonne at 1%.
But on that note, it would be interesting to see what happens to Boldania, and I'm sure you're going to get into it more.
Yeah, and remember that, and if you zoom in on this map, you've got the orange bit there, which is Liontown's part of the tenement, but then you've got the blue bit, which is Boldania as well, but that's under a farm in... with MinRes, Pantoro and Tulla.
Just Pantoro now, because they consolidated.
Now the merge is done. Yeah.
Just Pantoro, sorry.
Yeah.
I bloody read something. Oh, God, you bloody forget about some things, don't you? Too much. Yeah.
So and this is exactly what I was speaking to at the top of the show. Their whole Goldfields area plan becomes a bit more clear now if they do manage to finalise this deal for Bald Hill.
Mm. So I guess what's happening in that region and all the links, I know I've gone into it before, but like, you know, you've got developing the process of acquiring Essential Metals. We've just spoken about Min Resources being the front runner at the moment to take Bald Hill. Mineral Resources owns 13.5% develop, and they've also got that farming agreement with Pantoro for their bulk side of the Boldania project, which is a butts to Liontown's thing. It's all connected as one Boldania. So it's all went quite a bit down there. Like, they released the mineral resource 2019, it was 15 million tonne at 1% lith. Then in March 2022, because all their focus was on Kathleen Valley, obviously, why put the attention down here, they did some further drilling. So I think they did some extensional drilling for their AN deposit. Well, that's what's contained in the mineral resource. But then there's also this northwest prospect. And they got some drill results back from there. So, like, you know, 5 metres at 1.3, 10 at 1.1. And it looks, based on the outcrops and where these intersections are, that looks like to be a lot more steeply dipping ore body. Not included in the resource, but there is that. They haven't really done anything on that area since. So
when you say steeply dipping, Matty, I always think underground.
Underground. How bloody good is it? You know, I'll venture towards the underground. I guess where am I going with this? I just don't think Boldania can be forgotten about from an M&A perspective. It's right in the mix of that for that very small, like that region is like classed as one region, but if you talk about the smaller region around Bald Hill, the closest ones are Pioneer Dome, Essential, which will soon to be developed, and you've got Boldania. As you see, it's a bit of a close triangle. So, and MinRes have got, you know, they've got their fingers in develop, they've got their fingers in
everything.
In Boldania with the Pantoro side of it, but you've got Liontown's one sort of sitting there. So should the Albemarle deal go through with Liontown? I guess the question is, will they keep Boldania? Will they divest it out? You look at the exploration potential with that northwest prospect of being a steeper dipping ore body. That to me brings develop into play to be a function of consolidating that region in and around very close to Bald Hill. So, and there you could class them as a partner of MinRes with the shareholding, and MinRes are elected to vote in favour of the essential deal. So there is a bit of an alliance forming there. So I reckon watch this space with Baldania to see what happens there. You wouldn't think anything had happened soon in the middle of a takeover offer.
No.
But will it be divested out, and what's going to happen there? And would they be able to, if they're purely relying on a lot more exploration potential, will they pick it up pretty cheap? And who knows? So I think keep an eye on it.
I can't imagine MinRes picking up Baldania cheap. And the fact that it's been held onto sort of unencumbered by MinRes all this time tells me that Liontown probably just didn't let MinRes ever kind of look at it properly, because look at MinRes on every other logo on that slide there, including the tenements adjacent to Baldania by virtue of that farming agreement with Bantoro. So they clearly, you know, had some interest in that specific deposit area.
So flip around what I'm saying, Trav.
Yeah.
What do you think the power of Baldania would be for Albemarle?
Well, I see Liontown's strategy of just holding onto it despite it not actually being a core asset. It's just like, well, you know, MinRes is getting more and more active, so the value of Baldania goes up and up and up.
Yeah.
You don't have to do any work for that value to go up, because MinRes is doing all the know, showing their hand that they want everything in the region, right? So holding on to it and doing nothing, actually the value keeps going up. So for Albemarle, they can choose to hold on to it longer, and then maybe the value keeps going up. It's just like a bit of a free kick, a free option. Albemarle, do they really need the cash that comes from selling it? I mean, if they get a knockout offer, maybe they'll sell it. But
if you look at the value of Essential, what they pay for that, about 100, was it 150 mil?
Yeah.
Something along that lines, that scheme.
Yeah.
This is pretty, a bit more tons, but a bit lower grade, so pretty equivalent. But as you said, supply and demand. So God, if they picked it up for 150 mil, it wouldn't be a bad job. But who knows? Will it be MinRes? Would develop look there? But there looks like a bit of a potential consolidation around a bit extra supply to go into that Bald Hill mine.
Yeah, hard to predict what Albemarle will do.
Watch this space.
Should we chat about Tieto, guys?
Lead her away. Tieto, give us a bit of context on, you talked about Côte d'Ivoire.
So as we touched on at the top of the show, they've got the Abuja gold mine in what's also known as the Ivory Coast in West Africa. So they came out with second half guidance for the second half of this year, as well as a production schedule up until 2030. And on the back of that, they're down 25%. So the market's not taken a liking to it.
You want to know a fun fact about Ivory Coast?
Sure.
It's one of those, it's a good trivia thing when you put up, name this flag. You put it up, you think next it's the island flag, but the orange and the green are around the other way. It's the Ivory Coast. Good trivia one. Don't fall for it if you go to a trivia night.
So Tieto announced also that they'd produced 11.1 thousand ounces in August at an average grade of 0.9 grams per tonne. So that's a pretty low grade, especially when you take into account that their reserve grade is 1.3 grams per tonne. So we'll delve into that reconciliation difference.
I've seen this before somewhere.
Ramp up issues. Yeah. So Tieto finished August with $44 million in cash. So that leaves them, after the 25% markdown, at a market cap of $360 million. And they've also got US$19 million in debt. That was a working capital facility with Chorus Bank, which started at US $25 million. They paid off six and a bit. So the update of second half guidance was a bit of a shocker. So they guided to 80,000 ounces over the 6 month period we're currently in.
It's a long way off where they provided the range before, isn't it, JD?
So that previous midpoint was 112,500 ounces, which they'd reaffirmed just a month ago, almost 30% lower from a guidance that they'd reaffirmed 1 month ago. And on the cost front, they'd put forward an all-in sustaining cost of US$1,262 as a midpoint, which is a 27% increase. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty amazing how in 1 month you can go from you know, where they were to having production go 30% roughly the wrong direction and cost 30% roughly
this is a grade issue, right?
Grade is king.
Yeah. So,
production
lower, cost, unit cost higher. It's all related to grade reconciliation, isn't it?
100%. And there's a line in the first page or the second page of the announcement today that really stood out. Tietto completed more than 15 kilometres of grade control drilling during July and August at a closely spaced pattern of 12.5 metres by 6.25 metres. So it's long been a critique of Tietto that they hadn't done enough grade control drilling and they didn't have, you know, enough geological confidence and an understanding in the ore body at a high enough level. And, you know, to follow that critique on, it was always going to lead to issues with mining if you ask certain people who had an opinion of the stock. And, you know, to what they'd thought, I'd heard that argument a year ago, more than a year ago, and it's playing out exactly that way.
Yeah, you can look at some of the brokers that initiated on this stock at various points during its development cycle, and a recurring theme in some of those initiations, some of them initiated with sales. Mm-hmm. A common theme was issues with the resource that some of these brokers had.
And the company capture themselves perfectly in today's announcement in quotation marks. Grade control drilling confirmed by mine to mill reconciliation for August 2023 resulted in the same amount of contained metal but contained within 10% more ore tonnes. So further on that point.
So the grade's gone down.
How does that? I'm so confused by that statement.
Could be a density thing as well. That's another thing that can change.
So a bit further on that point, I believe, you know, and to what you just said, Trav, this is one of the key reasons that most of the funding for the project was done via equity funding as opposed to a more standard mix of debt and equity.
Yeah, I'm keen to add a bit of colour on that point, JD. I mean, for context, on the 16th of November 2021, Tietto announced that they had mandated Taurus to provide up to US$140 million of debt of the $200 million US stated capex, right? So this is 16th of November. A week later, they raised $85 million in equity and called themselves fully funded. So there's your debt and equity mix. I read that Taurus mandate. It's not like the money's there, the facility's available. They just mandated Taurus to provide a facility. So I assume at that point it's still subject to conditions, due diligence, etc. So then Tietto was still talking about the Taurus debt mandate on the 15th of March 2022, so months and months later, right?
And it's then your birthday.
Hey. And only 10 days after your birthday, Matty, they went into a trading halt and raised $130 million equity, stating that their new strategy is now to fully fund project development with no debt and that the placement replaces the existing mandate with Taurus. So in September, they topped up again with another $49 million placement. This time it was to a Chinese gold company. And the very public pivot in strategy here from a financing perspective, going from the debt and equity mix to an equity only, to me it really just like begs the question. I don't think we're going to get answers on this one, but like why pivot from debt and equity to only equity? If you ever model your returns per share to equity, it's higher the more you gear it, as long as your IRR is higher than the cost of debt. So it's like a very public pivot in strategy. And I just wonder, like, did the debt financiers not get comfortable? You know, like that's the open-ended question that I have that I don't think we'll get an answer to.
So on the production schedule, the other part of the announcement today, Tietto still expect to mine roughly 170,000 ounces for the next 7 years at an all-in sustaining cost of just under US$1,100 per ounce. So when you compare that to the DFS, which I think came out in October 2021, it's slightly more ounces, but at a significantly higher cost than that DFS outlined. And another aspect of the company that we frequently get asked, and especially when we talk about Africa in general, is the jurisdiction. So I think it's worth touching on. We've heard a lot of, you know, negative stories come out of the likes of Sudan, Niger, Mali, similar sort of nations over the past couple months. But I actually look at Côte d'Ivoire as one of the better African jurisdictions. It's obviously West Africa and you get all the, you know, issues that come with that. But there are companies like Endeavour, Barrick, Perseus, they all have operations in Ivory Coast and they all seem to be going quite well.
Did Ivory Coast used to be the name, now it's Côte d'Ivoire, or... it's the same thing or?
Yeah, they speak French there. So Côte d'Ivoire is Ivory Coast in French, right, I believe.
Get you now.
So like I said, I want to touch on the outlook for Tiedos. So they've got a reserve statement coming out this month, and it's one I'm going to be quite keen to see. So with that initial additional drilling that we've seen, I wonder if the grade drops off in comparison to previous reserve grade as they potentially realise it's not feasible to extract this gold at a 1.3 grams per tonne rate. So in other words, do we see a reserve downgrade? On the milling front, they've said they're targeting 5.5 million tonnes per annum, which is quite a jump up from the mill which was built at a 4.0 million tonnes per annum rate. So they announced in today's statement that they're looking at de-bottlenecking the mill to achieve that. Mm. There are a couple other red flags which I'm pretty keen to talk about, and unfortunately they are concerns that we talk about a little bit too much. So
one of them is one of our favourite red flags.
One of our favourite, and yeah, like I said, I think we just speak about it way too much in the mining industry, but it's hard not to look past the founder and the previous managing director, Dr. Cajun Wang, retiring from the board on May 30th. So MDs, founders, CEOs of companies don't generally leave during ramp up for no reason.
Is that becoming not true, but? Because it seems that like they do now.
I mean, we've got no assumptions to make here, Matty, about the cause of Dr. Cajun Wang resigning. But it's like it always just begs the question, and we just see it as like a massive red flag in our own internal evaluation. When we're like ramp up is such like a critical point in time for a developer. You know, like execution matters so much. Things can go horribly wrong. What the outcome for shareholders is so. So polarizing. It can either be awesome or horrible. And you really want continuity of leadership throughout that period because things are so fragile.
Yeah, it's a red flag. It's something to look into. And then, you know, in addition to that, Francis Harper, the chairman, sold 750,000 shares. Granted, that is less than 5% of his shareholding. And he did mention that that was to cover tax liabilities. And there was one more concern I wanted to talk about, and that relates to stockpiles. So the company flagged that they have a lack of stockpiles, which could hinder performance and perhaps has hindered performance over the past couple months. So they flagged that equipment had been held up at customs, and that certainly wouldn't have helped them being able to do the pre-stripping and some of the mining. And I know you looked into this a bit more, Maddie. What did you find out with regards to stockpiling?
You've got to infer a bit, I guess. But look, if you're wanting to run the mill above nameplate, that's all well and good, but you need the mining to deliver that rock to run that mill at a high run rate. As you said, it was designed for 4 million tonne. They want it to run at 5.5. So if you want to run it at 5.5, you've got to find an extra 1.5 million tonne of ore in a year to chuck it through the mill. So, look.
And it needs to be factored in and around the various seasons. You have quite a wet season in tropical parts as well, so there might be hiccups during the wet season. It all needs to be built into the mine plan.
Yeah, so if there's a lack of stockpiles, it means they're milling quicker than they mine, which then when you get in that position, you don't have, I guess, flexibility, especially if you're blending ore on the ROM. Like there might be, depending on how the ore bodies work, you might have a high grade, a low grade and a or something, and there's like could be 5 buckets of high grade, 3 buckets of low grade is the mix, and that's going on. But if your stockpiles are empty and you're waiting on trucks to get up there to do it, it just buggers the whole thing, makes everything difficult. So overall, if you want to bloody run at a higher nameplate, you need to guarantee the dirt's coming up. But if you've got troubles at customs and you've got a wet season that has possibly impacted production, puts you in a shitty little spot.
So. Agreed.
It's all about having the secret to mining is having a very smooth production profile, not big spikes and lows and spikes. If you're the best operations are the ones that just consistently perform.
Yeah, and they had tried to address this with the production schedule. The previous schedule was much more varying. It was, you know, on a per annum basis ranging between 80,000 and 200,000, and it's a much steadier, you know, between 160 and 175,000 ounces per annum over the next 7 years. So they are trying to address that. Perhaps, you know, whether that's achievable, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
Beauty.
Good stuff, boys.
Right. A couple sponsors to thank.
Oh, geez. Oh, I just can't wait for tomorrow because there's just going to be more news. It's just flying at the moment.
Sure is, mate.
Next year is going to be a big year. I feel it.
Just on the decline.
M&A.
Love it.
Especially when all my things start coming true. Right, our partners, we mentioned K-Drill and Terra Capital at the top of the show.
Yep. Anytime.
Absolute GCs.
Anytime Exploration Services, got to thank them. JP Search.
JP Search, they're getting a bit of bloody, might be getting a bit of business from us. Bloody tell you what.
Mm, and Top Drill, lastly. Thanks a lot, guys.
Appreciate it. And get on Spotify, eh? Click that star. Give us some stars on Spotify.
Subscribe on YouTube.
And if you're not, if you, yeah, because there's still about, what, over, bit under half of the people that watch on YouTube aren't subscribed.
So yeah, and if you've got any feedback, get in touch, get in the comments, email us, join the Hooteroo chat, let us know what you reckon.
There's not a lack of feedback.
More is better.
Righto, Money Miners, Hooteroo.
The information contained in this episode of Money of Mine is of general nature only and does not take into account the objectives, financial situation, or needs of any particular person. Before making any investment decision, you should consult with your financial advisor and consider how appropriate the advice is to your objectives, financial situation, and needs.